This audio lecture is brought to you by RTS on iTunes U at the virtual campus of Reformed Theological Seminary. To listen to other lectures and to access additional resources, please visit us at itunes.rts.edu. For additional information on how to take distance education courses for credit towards a fully accredited Master of Arts in Religion degree, please visit our website at virtual.rts.edu.
And then secondly, I want you to consider, and you know about this too, not only two views, you should consider two people. Romans 5:14, nevertheless, death reigned from Adam to Moses, even over those who had not sinned according to the likeness of the transgression of Adam, who is a type of him who is to come. Bernard Baruch, before the Senate hearing, was asked a way to prevent the periodic ups and downs in economic cycles in America. And he said, of course, there is a way. Pass a law changing human nature and make it retroactive to the Garden of Eden. You ever think about the fall? You know, it really is kind of an unbelievable thing to tell people about this. You know, two people, long before you were ever born, Adam, man, and Eve messed it up, and we're all paying the price for that. If you want to argue with God about something that isn't fair, that's not fair. James Dobson, his wife is a teacher, or was a teacher, a substitute teacher. Have I told you this? When you had substitute teachers when you were growing up, did they last very long? I mean, that's a hard place to be. I have the privilege, and I say it with a degree of pride, of being a part of a fourth grade class in Vance Elementary School that ran off more teachers in a 1 week period than anybody in the history before or since of Vance Elementary School. I remember some of the students, you know those little balls that blow up when you step on them? I remember them rolling the ball, those little balls about, and the teacher jumping on and start screaming, and she got her foot caught in the trash can and was going out, and she was crying the whole time. Well, Mrs. Dobson had an advantage over a lot of substitute teachers. She had a husband who was a psychologist. And so she came to this second grade class, and before she got there, after discussing it with Dr. Dobson, she put a poster on the blackboard with a skull and crossbones. And these little kids came in, and they sat down and look at the skull and crossbones. They get kind of quiet. When they finally settled down, she said, "Do you know what that is?" And they go, "No, ma'am." She said, "That's my poison list." She said, "If I tell you to do something and you don't do it, and then I tell you one more time, you go on my poison list. And you don't want to go on my poison list." She never told him what it was, but she didn't have to. That was enough. They were quiet, and she managed to put in a week and teach something of import to those second graders. Now, some of you are single, and you're saying, what a horrible thing to do to those poor little children. Those of us who have kids know that was mild, and we're surprised it even worked. You know, it is really interesting to watch parents who honestly in their heart of hearts believe that the fall does not affect infants. You know, did you memorize Wordsworth when you were in high school or college? The child is father of the man, trailing clouds of glory. There's this wonderful story that I wish I could tell, but it so violates Christian theology that I can't. But it's a wonderful story about that a friend of mine wrote in a book, and I've tried to avoid him because I didn't want to tell him. That was really a bad story. Y'all not tell it. But about the little sister that was born into the family and the little brothers a year and a half, and he keeps telling his parents, "I want to go in and talk to my sister, and I don't want to do it with you being there." Or he's two. And they say, "We can't." But he really wanted to do it, so they decided to let him go and talk to his little baby sister and spend some time with her. But they left the door cracked so they could hear what he said. And he climbed up on the crib, and he looked down at his baby sister, and he said, "Little baby sister, quick, tell me about God. I'm beginning to forget." Isn't that a wonderful story? Just a lie. It's from the pit of hell. It smells like smoke. It's not true. And I love to tell it, but I can't. And the reason I can't is because of what the Scripture clearly says about two people who did something bad long before you were ever born, and it never has been fair, and it doesn't seem fair to me now. And I don't get a vote. Let me read you. These are three monkeys discussing evolution. Listen, you two, it can't be true. There's a rumor going around that's a very ill sound that man descended from our noble race. Why, the very idea is a dire disgrace. You'll never see around a coconut tree a monkey fence. It doesn't make sense. And then let the coconuts go to waste, forbidding other monkeys to have a taste. Here's another thing a monkey won't do. Go out at night and get on a stew or use a gun or a knife to take another monkey's life. Yes, man descended, that ornery cuss, but brothers, he didn't descend from us. Didn't. Started. I have a... Let me... You ever, I have a friend who's a lawyer, who's a Christian, who started one day listing the things that we wouldn't need if the fall had not taken place. Did you ever think about that? And the list, I mean, he would call me, he did this for almost 2 months. He'd call me every morning and he'd tell me the things that he had added to his list. It is absolutely endless. You wouldn't need doctors. You wouldn't need garbage collectors. You wouldn't need teachers. You wouldn't need police officers. You wouldn't need, it just goes on and on when you begin to think about it. The truth is, from a Christian theological standpoint, and by the way, Francis Schaeffer, I'm always asked about the evolution thing, about whether it's an age or an eon or a day. I believe in a seven-day creation. That's because I'm too dumb to understand anything else. And because I believe that science changes every 10 years and Moses doesn't. And if you want to cull your library, just take every science book that you have that's over 10 years old and burn it because it's irrelevant. And I don't know what they're going to decide tomorrow or the next day, so I'm going to stand with Moses. I think it was 7 days. But Francis Schaeffer used to be asked if we as Christians could believe in evolution in a biblical sense, theistic evolution, and then interpret Genesis 1 through 3 in a long period, a sequential time, that took a long time of creation. And Francis Schaeffer, and he was a friend of mine, by the way, and I liked him a lot. But Francis Schaeffer said, yes, of course, but there's one thing you cannot compromise, because the whole of Christian theology is built, the superstructure is built on this basic fact. You cannot compromise an actual space-time fall. There has to be a real Adam, because the second Adam doesn't make any sense unless there was a first one. The theology of Romans is clearly taught within the context of an actual space-time fall. Now, let me say something that I may have said, but it needs to be repeating because it's pretty basic, and it's this. Adamic sin is repeated and, without God's grace, magnified in every generation within family lines. Let me say that again. Adamic sin is repeated and, without God's grace, magnified in every generation within family lines. The Bible says it in lots of places. Until I started studying this material, I didn't realize the Bible said this. Listen to this. Exodus 20, 5b through 6. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, here it comes, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing mercy to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. And we spent a lot of time talking about dysfunctional families and how that works its way out and why people do that sort of thing. But if you want to use psychological language and go the route of psychobabble and examine people where they are, you're going to come up with exactly the same thing. Something's going on. And it goes on within family lines, and we're all related, every one of us, no more than 50th cousin from everybody else who ever lived. That means I'm related to Hitler, and I'm related to Billy Graham, and I'm related to the good ones, and I'm related to the bad ones. Somebody sent me a birthday card. Once upon a time, in the land of Fuzzle Wuzzle, there lived a merry band of teddy bears. All day long, they'd laugh and frolic in the fields and valleys. Every evening, they'd sit down to a big banquet of honey and muffins and oatmeal. They, after singing a round of silly songs, they'd get all comfy and cozy and fall asleep beneath the magic lollipop tree. This went on for years and years. Then the Battle of Armageddon broke out and they all died. The end. And then you open the card and it said, "Hey, do I look like Mother Goose? Deal with it. Happy birthday." But, you know, I read that card and I thought, yeah, that's true. That's true. You're born cold, wet, and hungry, and then it gets worse. And that's because something is really bad that's happened in our world. As some of you know, I did Skeptics Forum for a number of years. I'm not even sure what classical and evidential and presuppositional apologetics, though we debated it for 2.5 hours at our faculty meeting today. Luther called me into his office yesterday. And we're having some real deep, very vigorous conversations at faculty meetings. And Luther called me into his office yesterday, and we were sitting down talking, and he was saying, you know, he's very calm and quiet, and he affirms you, and he was assessing the rest of the faculty and all this. And I said, "Luther, this dawned on me why you invited me in here." And he said, "Oh." And I said, "Yeah, you think I'm going to say something tomorrow that's going to blow this thing apart. And you want to calm me down before..." He said, "Oh, no," but he blushed. So I said to him, I said, "Luther, I promise I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to keep my mouth shut. I don't even understand the issues." And I told him at the end of the meeting today, "Look, I'm really ticked. I just don't understand what's going on. If somebody explained it to me, I'll choose up sides and get on one side or on the other." But the truth is, when you start looking at the fall, it does that sort of thing. And there's no... I do Skeptics Forum, what I was going to say about apologetics, where we invite, or did invite, for sessions that went about 13 weeks, agnostics and atheists, and I was the only Christian allowed to be there. I'm very good at pop apologetics, by the way, and I think well on my feet, so I talk good, not properly, but good, and I win arguments. I just want you to know that. And I'm a street fighter, so I'm an ideal person for that kind of thing. As we got into dealing with this kind of thing, sometimes it'd be give and take about the problem of suffering and a good God. There would be some good give and take about whether God exists, about Christology, and whether the resurrection really happened. But let me tell you something. I won every time. In fact, I won all of them, to be honest with you. But I won in a few minutes the argument about the basic nature of human beings. You see, every artist worth his or her salt, every playwright worth his or her salt. A lot of the proclamation of postmodern film is what says. And all of this time, the whole culture, thinking part, you know, a lot of our culture just lemmings following people to the sea. But I'm talking about the thinkers in our culture see that something is essentially bent, something is essentially and basically warped in human nature. That's why Camus was so profound in the things that he said. If you read The Fall of Camus, he's fascinated with guilt. His whole myth of Sisyphus pushing the rock up the hill only to have it come down was his statement about how bad off, something's wrong, something's really wrong. And so often in dealing with a pagan who is a thoughtful pagan, I can say, "Do you ever wonder why we're not any better than we are? You ever wonder why you're not any better than you are? And you ever wonder why you think there is any such thing as better?" And all of a sudden, you begin to move in a proper direction with the understanding that the fall is an actual space-time event, and we were all infected with that particular reality. All right, thirdly, I want you to consider not only two views and two people, I want you to consider two attractions. Romans 7:22 through 24, again, "For I delight in the law of God according to the inward man, but I see another law in my members warring against the law of my mind and bringing me into captivity to the law of sin, which is in my members. O wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death?" One of the things, Eve. Yeah. This was, again, a part of what they told me to do in Seattle, to make everything rhyme or fit together or have acrostic to it. So I want you to know that I've got two views and two attractions and two people and some other twos. Two alternatives, What am I now talking about? Two attractions. So there's two people, Adam and Eve. That's to help you remember it. What did I do? From where? Oh, I see. Don't pull that. That's the one that connects me to Charlotte, right? Okay. I thought I'd drop the microphone again. Let me tell you a story. By the way, I don't do motivational speaking. I used to. I spoke for some award. Don't kneel at my feet. It makes me nervous. Although it's quite flattering. I want you to know. It is. what was I saying? Oh, motivational speaking. I did award banquets, and I did something for the bankers industry, and then there's this semi-Christian service master things. They have these big things all over the country. You go and you speak for 35, 40 minutes, maybe an hour at the most, and you don't have to be nice to anybody. They knock on your door. They put you in a nice hotel, in a suite, and they knock on your door about 5 minutes before you speak, and they say, Mr. Brown, you're about ready to speak. You go downstairs, get up on the stage, you do your thing. You can't talk about Jesus a lot, but you do your thing, and you say nice things, faith and value stuff, and tell some jokes. And you get off the stage, they give you this big check. And I thought, I can do that. I found my calling. And I went to my mentor, Fred Smith, and I said, Fred, I can do this. I mean, I'm tired of dealing with sessions and Christians. Man, I'm tired of praying for particular funerals in my church. I can do motivational speaking, and I can make a lot of money. And Fred, who has loved me enough to tell me the truth, said I was really stupid, that if I wanted to become a talking head, that would happen, and that I would sell out easily to filthy lucre. But let me tell you a story that pagans, motivational speakers, tell a lot. And you've heard it 1,000 times in the various versions of it. It's about this eagle egg that somehow got in a chicken coop by mistake and hatched with the chicks. And the eagle looked around and said, you know, I'm a little bit bigger than they are, but I'm hungry. So the eagle chick began to go around and peck for corn the way the chicks did. But every time the eagle would look at the chicks, he would say, I'm different. You know, I'm weird. There's something funny about me. I don't think the way they do. I don't like what they like. I have this yearning for meat, man. I don't want to peck around for corn. But that's all the eagle who had gotten into the chicken coop knew. And so the eagle did his best to continue with the mold that he had been given. Then one day, and I love to hear motivational speakers do it, there was a spot in the blue sky. And as it came, and the baby eagle looked up, and he saw the spot, and as it got closer, he saw it was a bird. And then he saw it was an eagle, and then the eagle cried out, and he knew his destiny, and he raised his wings, and he flew into the horizon. And everybody goes, yeah, man, that's me. And then a motivational speaker say, you can do that. You can do that, and you deserve it. And that's a lie. It's from the pit of hell. It's not true. But listen. It is true of you. It really is true of you. All of a sudden, you have an alternative you didn't have before. Now, you're not going to, if I know human nature, and I know human nature, you're not going to avail yourself of it very often. But the truth is, you now have an alternative that you didn't have before. If I knew the Latin, I would use it. You've probably learned it in class. But now I have the ability. Now, there are people who say, you're free now only to be obedient. That's what, when I first started teaching freedom, I went on a radio program with this guy who wanted to straighten me out. And he said, now when you talk about freedom, you're not talking about freedom like they sing in the songs, are you? And I said, yeah, I think. He said, no, those are pagans. You're not talking about that kind of freedom. You mean, because the Bible teaches that now you're free, but you're free to be obedient. I said, yeah, that's true, but I'm free to be disobedient too. And he didn't like that at all, not a bit. And he kept trying to correct me. So you got to be careful, although he made a good point. It's the point I'm making now. You got to be careful with how you say it and how you live it. But the truth is, you've been given a freedom that you never had before. You have an alternative and a choice that you never had before. That was the two attractions. And it also includes two alternatives. I blended that material together so that I could, let me see if there's anything else. Okay, and then fifth, and this is the final point as we talk about biblical anthropology. You are absolutely the quietest class, both in Charlotte and here, I have ever had. I mean, I am saying really radical stuff, guys. And you just sit there, and I don't know whether it's I'm that good or you're just asleep or what. Does this bother you a little bit?
No, we've been in some of your classes before.
Yeah, so you've bought into this thing, huh? I mean, people usually are attacking me by now, and you guys just sit there and smile. And I don't know, are you smoking something? I want you to know I'm not sensitive. You want to stop me and say I don't agree with this. But anyway, fifth, I want you to consider not only two views, two people, two attractions. And I did two attractions and two alternatives together. But I want you to consider two positions, a child of darkness and a child of light. Galatians 4:7, therefore you are no longer a slave but a son. And if a son, then an heir of God through Christ. Now, if many of you are familiar with Jack Miller, or if any of you have ever taken a sonship course, have any of you ever done that? You know what I'm talking about? So you know what's taught there. Charlie and Ruth Jones say that Jack taught us the theology of freedom and repentance and grace, and you gave us permission to party, or you gave us permission to be free. And I think maybe there is some truth to that. But if you've taken a sonship course, you're aware that Jack's constant reference is to the slave, the orphan, or the child of God. And I think a lot of who you are and how you act and what you do has to do with how you perceive yourself in that relationship with God. And most of us perceive ourselves as slaves. The servanthood message is a good message until it becomes a demeaning message of the creature that we have been created and the salvation that we've been given. I love Honey Tree's, you know, I'm a servant song. I sit here in the hall waiting for him to call. That's nice. And I know what she's saying. But when you get too much of that going and you forget that you are a child of the King, you begin to really... And one of the things that Jack will often say to people who are around him, you're acting like an orphan. Now, what does an orphan do? An orphan cringes because an orphan has generally been abused. An orphan is never sure exactly whether he or she will be loved and accepted. An orphan is constantly living in fear and has to please the people who adopt or who take them in as foster children. An orphan lives a horrible life. But when you have been accepted as a child of the King and you see yourself in the adoption process as being accepted completely, it makes a difference in how you see yourself. Do y'all know who Fred Craddock is? He teaches homiletics at Emory University, which means he's probably not theologically very good, but he tells great stories. And if you ever see any of his books, you ought to get them. He's a Methodist, and he's a grand preacher. And even if you don't agree with him, you'll get a lot of illustrations. And those of you who are going to be preachers will, for the rest of your life, be looking for illustration. But Fred Craddock has this wonderful story when he was up in the mountains of Tennessee, and he and his wife were looking over one of those overlooks in the Great Smokies, and an old man came up to him and started talking to him. And Fred didn't want to talk to him because he was on vacation. And so the man said, son, what is it you do? And Fred said that he would probably confuse him. So he said, I teach homiletics. The old man said, you're a preacher, huh? And Fred knew he was sunk. He said, son, let me tell you a story. And then he talked about a boy by the name of Ben Hooper who grew up in a small town in Tennessee. And he was illegitimate. He didn't have a father. And those were the days, said the old man talking to Fred Craddock, when it was really difficult to grow up in that kind of situation. Today it's not that big a deal, and we're not ashamed in the way we used to be. But this young man, constantly, in all of his life, people would say to the young man, son, you look like, and then they'd mention a man in the town. And so all of his life he heard, you look like, and it was just awful. It was just terrible. He grew up with this horrible self-image. But he found a church where he liked this preacher, and it was a Baptist church. And he really liked this preacher because he spoke clear and honest. There was dirt under his fingernails. And he said stuff that made sense to the young boy as an adolescent. So he started attending church, but he always left in the final hymn before anybody would see him because he just couldn't stand the shame of who he was. One time, he was so enamored with a sermon that had been preached by this preacher that he was slow in getting out of the back of the church. And just as he turned to flee, he found a big ham of a hand on his shoulder, and he turned, and to his horror, he was looking face to face at this old preacher. Preacher looked at him and said, "Son, what's your name?" Then he said, "You know, you look like," and he cringed, and he thought, "Not him, too. I can't deal with that here." And the preacher grinned and said, "You know who you look like? You look like a child of the King. Now you go out and live like it." As the old man talked, and as Fred Craddock and his wife listened to this story being told about Ben Hooper, they drove off down the side of the mountain, and they were trying to remember the name Ben Hooper, and they remembered there was a governor of the state of Tennessee by the name of Ben Hooper who served for 3 consecutive terms and one of the most successful and famous governors Tennessee had ever known. And as they talked, they remembered that he was a bastard. You know, sometimes we need people to come to us and say the same thing. You know, who you look like? You look like a child of the King. And so that's what Jack does, and not only in the seminars, but if you've been around Jack Miller much, if you've been around him recently, let me know, because there's something really weird about you. Used to say, somebody the other day asked if sent me an email and said, "You ought to interview Andre Nowen." And I said, "If we could, we'd have big ratings, but he's been dead for about 8 months now." But Jack used to say, if you'd ever been around him, he'd always say, "You're acting like an orphan. You're acting like an orphan." And we really do. And all of this, the acceptance and the grace and the unconditional love and the reality that we experience comes from the fact that we are now not an orphan. We're a child of the King. All right, I'm going to take a break now. When we come back, it's the beginning of Get Down time. I'm going to give you 17 blocks that you build in your direction toward freedom. And then, we'll never finish that tonight. But then we're going. Let me see. Then the next section after the 17 building blocks, I'm going to get into the 7 steps of freedom. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you just give us the 2 attractions and 2 alternatives?
Okay.
Just
didn't help very much, right?
No, it helped. It was wonderful.
It cut the time down a little bit. I understand. Let me get to it. The 2 views, you got those, basically good, basically evil. 2 people, Adam and Eve. The two attractions are that we are now attracted to the light in a way that we've never been attracted before. And then the 2 alternatives is that we now have the alternative, 1, to choose the darkness. But the alternative is that we now have, we can do something about it. We can move toward the light. See the difference? That's why I put them together. You can put them together. 2 attractions. We're attracted to the light. There are pagans that are attracted to the light. There are pagans who come to our churches and are warmed by the light. They like our fire, but they can't buy it. And so they slip into the darkness. So there are 2 attractions that are part of human nature. If you talk to the worst pagan on the face of the earth, remember Augustine's comment, "Thou hast created us for thyself, and our hearts are restless until they find their rest in thee." So those attractions are universal. They're a part of the anthropological reality of every human being, unless they're really sick. And then following on that, which I didn't separate, would be the 2 alternatives. For the first time, you have the alternative to choose to run, but you also, as a child of the King, have the alternative to move toward the light, which you did not have heretofore. Okay? And then the final one was the 2 positions, one a child of darkness and one a child of light, one a child of the King.
What is the scripture reference for the 2 positions?
Galatians? For the 2 what? Two positions, Galatians 4:7, therefore you are no, there are a lot of them, you're no longer a slave. That's the one that Jack uses all the time. You're no longer a slave, but a son, and if a son, and you ought to put parenthetically a daughter, then you are an heir of God through Christ.
This audio lecture is brought to you by RTS on iTunes U. at the virtual campus of Reformed Theological Seminary. To listen to other lectures and to access additional resources, please visit us at itunes.rts.edu. For additional information on how to take distance education courses for credit towards a fully accredited Master of Arts in Religion degree, please visit our website at virtual.rts.edu.